Hi everyone, welcome back to the HR Leaders Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Kathleen O'Driscoll, who's the Vice President of HR, Global Wellbeing, Benefits and HR Policy at Cognizant. During the episode, Kathleen shares how to create a sustainable culture of wellbeing, how to balance a global wellbeing approach with local relevance, and last but not least, she shares how Cognizant are effectively training their managers. As always, before we jump into the video, make sure you hit the subscribe button, turn on the notification bell and follow on your favorite podcast platform. With that being said, let's jump in. Kathleen, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Chris, for having me.
Nice to see you healthy. Like, I think every time we try to do a show, I am sick and then you're sick and then the kids are sick and then
it's the season.
It is the season, right, as well. Like, I feel like, you know, it's really weird. Like, during the whole of the lockdowns, I wasn't sick once. Because my daughter wasn't at nursery. I feel like because Robin wasn't at nursery, she wasn't bringing all the germs. And now she's back at nursery. It's like, okay, here we go. Here we go again.
Yeah, and then when they first went back to school, they were all still masked. So still no germs came home. And now, and then like, our immune systems forgot and all the germs are coming back.
So. Yeah. Well, hopefully we both got through it so we can have a nice New Year's and happy Christmas and just, and feel. But anyway, apart from that, how are you? How are things?
I'm doing very well. I'm looking forward to the holidays coming up. You know, I think I was saying to somebody else there, you know, this is the end of the year. It's that balance between, oh my gosh, there's not enough time to get everything done that we have to get done. But at the same time, it's always nice to have a reset and look back, because I think so often, you know, we're so busy doing things and we get something done, we move on to the next thing. And I think the end of the year is a good time to look back and think of, wow, look at all we've achieved in a year, right? And
yeah,
then look to the new year ahead.
So. I'm normally so bad at doing that. Like, we try now, Shane and I, to have like a dinner up towards the end of the year. We actually do it with our wives as well. And it's a thing that we kind of do just to celebrate like what we've achieved this year and how far we've come. Because I realized in the past, like, we were working so hard and our head down that we forget to appreciate the journey.
Yeah.
You know, and what's happened as well. So many of us do that. I think we're all guilty of doing that. It's important to reflect. And
it is important. And when you look back, it's sometimes you amaze yourself, like, wow, you know, we did all, and you forget about things from January, you know, which seemed like so long ago. So.
Yeah. We're so busy chasing the next thing, you know, rather than going, wow, look all the things I achieved along the way. So tell everyone a little bit more about you, you know, your background and journey to where we are now.
Oh, so like in the organization or
personally, overall? Professionally, you know, did you choose this career or did it kind of choose you along the way?
So yes, I dreamed of becoming an HR.
Yeah, we all do. Don't we all?
Of course, doesn't everybody? But no, I think I was actually a psychology major in college and I thought I was going to do that route. Really liked that. And then I wound up meeting, she was an HR vice president at a company. And when I was doing like some early class, master's degree classes for a psychology degree, I started talking with her and I thought, you know, it seemed to have a lot of the aspects that I liked, you know, in terms of working with people and that, I guess that kind of triggered a career change. And I wound up taking a role somewhere and I really liked it. And then sometimes, you know, sometimes you proactively make decisions and then sometimes opportunities present themselves, right? And it opens up a whole new path that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of parallels there, aren't there, really, from what you were studying to HR. So it's quite a good crossover, a great crossover, in fact.
Yeah, I think there is, just in terms of, you know, how, you know, especially when you think about like the well-being space, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of work in psychological safety and mental well-being and mental health and just that whole person and a people first culture, right? It is that balance of, you know, the underlying spirit of what both aspects are trying to do is very similar with a lot of overlap. So
how did your role, because you're VP of HR, Global Benefits, Wellbeing, HR Policy, how did that all come to be? Did you kind of take this on and say, I want to put myself forward for this? You know, how did this role come to be?
Yeah, so I think in terms of like evolution, you know, I was in different companies throughout my career, and I was in one company where I did a lot of work in benefits, started in U.S. benefits, wound up doing a lot of work then in M&A, which exposed me to a lot of international benefits and international labor law. So I did a role with that for a while. Then I wound up moving to a nonprofit organization that worked with employer companies And there we were heavily focused in global well-being and working with companies who were developing their global well-being strategy. So allowed me to develop a lot there. And when this role came up, it seemed like it was like a culmination of a lot of the different things that I had worked on at other, you know, prior parts of my career, and really helped to bring it together. And it was exciting for me to be able to take a role like this that pulled on all of those aspects at an organization at such scale, right? It has such a large footprint, so you're able to make meaningful impact to that. And it has a culture that strongly believes in it, right? And feels strongly about, mm-hmm. you know, associate well-being. So just felt like an overall good fit.
Nice. It's interesting because, you know, the role of head of well-being, you know, director of well-being is quite a new one in many organizations, and it sits in different places depending on the business. But I'm seeing more and more now the well-being role sit within comms and bents. Why do you think that is? Or be with leaders that have that experience, shall I say? Yeah.
I think it's probably because a lot of the underlying programs to support it overlap a bit, like with the benefit, with mm-hmm. the benefit space, right? I think it often does sit within HR, right? Because it's a people-focused agenda. And then if you think of the specific programs to offer to people that align to that, they are, you know, they could be the benefits specifically themselves or ancillary programs. So that's why I think of like the program delivery of it, and maybe the strategy and branding and things like that sit with that. But I think what really makes it successful is in companies where you do recognize that the programs of well-being can live there, but the actual strategy and the culture and the ownership of well-being is really owned by everybody, right? Because that's how it really becomes infused throughout mm-hmm. the organization.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar to like attrition, right? Like I think in some companies they might look to HR as fix attrition, right? And attrition is everybody's yeah. problem.
Yeah.
And for everybody to address. And I think of it as the same as well-being, right? It's for every manager, every leader, every peer, colleague, you know, they have a stake in it. So, mm-hmm.
so when you, I know recently you went through your global rebrand of the well-being strategy, how did you, I'm assuming you wanted to bring that as heart of it, you know, to say that this is owned by everyone, not just HR and me and a team. How did you communicate that?
Yeah, I think we were very fortunate because we did have a very strong kind of well-being culture already in the organization just naturally. So that gave us, you know, I'd say a leg up or a differentiator, right? So we didn't have to convince leaders that it was important. They were already saying it was important. So it was a natural evolution from that perspective. And then for us, it was more that we'd historically been very more regionalized, right? So, you know, some countries had very well-defined and developed strategies and communications and programs, whereas in other countries, it was less developed. So this enabled us to really set forward a consistent terminology, a consistent narrative, really aligned to, you know, how are we going to refer to things, which might seem very basic, but are very important when you're trying to create a somewhat consistent experience for, you know, the scale of, you know, 340,000 associates worldwide, right? You want to make sure that they're all feeling a somewhat similar experience. So consistency in terminology is important. So what we did is we aligned that way, and, you know, that we refer to it as well-being, not wellness. What are our four dimensions? Do we say, you know, we say mental health versus emotional health when we talk about, when we talk about the different dimensions of well-being. So that was really important for us because it gave then that common foundation to be able to talk about things.
The language that it can have.
Yeah. As we bring that out of throughout the organization.
That's such a really great point you mentioned, because a lot of times it's not that we don't want to speak about it or leaders don't want to talk about it, but they just don't have the language to talk about it. And if that's something and that language and those conversations is then what shapes the culture, right? Because when someone mm-hmm. says one of those words, people know what that means.
Yes.
You know, they're not worrying about offending someone or being mm-hmm. offended, or, you know, and all those things. A lot of the times that's really helps spark the conversations, right? You're giving them that. Yeah. What are those four dimensions, by the way, that you focus on?
So physical well-being, mm-hmm. Mental well-being, financial well-being, and then we call it life and work well-being. And we did that purposefully. I think sometimes you see social well-being.
Yes.
And, you know, that's it's similar types of things that we consider when we talk about life and work, but we wanted to capture that it's more than just like social aspects. So it's not happy hour on a Thursday, you know, or something like that when you think of social, right? It's, you know, your career aspects, it's balancing your work and life, it's leave programs, it's all of those other pieces that are very important. And we were purposeful in saying life and work and not work and life.
People get it. Sure that,
mm-hmm. Yeah. We're leading with, you know, work is a part of your life. So.
Yeah. Cause when you say social, people can start thinking all different things, but you've been very intentional about saying those two words as well, again, in the language. That's such a small tweak, but it's so important. Cause when you say that, you don't have to explain it to people. They get it straight away.
And if you think about like what is important to an individual, right? It's what life means to them.
Yeah.
That's important to them. Right. So it's in a way, it's like, it defines as to, you know, what's important to you, you know, is captured.
And it's great as well with just those, what you've just mentioned, the managers and leaders can then have conversations with their teams around those. Cause they have the language to be able to ask the questions, have the conversations. And we were speaking just before we pressed record how important the role of managers and leaders are, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's just a fundamental realization, right? That you can have the best programs you want and you can have a culture of well-being, but whether an associate actually feels that can vary depending on who their manager is, right? So the power that people manager has over somebody is very important, right? And it's that balance of course, you're managing to objectives and goals need to be achieved and there needs to be a performance culture there, but that can also be balanced by, you know, making sure that they're recognized as an individual and as a person with needs as well. And, you know, that's important because that how the manager, you know, discusses that and approaches that, or if they're approachable on it, is going to determine a lot of, you know, how they feel, the well-being culture.
What type of, because we're asking a lot of our managers, already, what type of support do you give or training do you provide for managers?
So we do have a curriculum of different kinds of training. We have some psychological safety training, and we also did roll out this year in, you know, we have a manager toolkit, in several of the regions, which goes over, you know, giving them information on different programs and different aspects. And one of the series sessions that we did this year was, we called it the people manager's role in building a culture of well-being. And we talked about, you know, our new, you know, global brand name and, you know, where you could find different resources. So we talked about those tactical aspects of it, but we started by talking about why it's important, right? Why has it become, you know, no longer a perk, but just, you know, a requirement and something that we should infuse, you know, how associates and employees and prospective employees expect it. And it was a really great dialogue because, you know, we had large populations.
What did you do? Virtual was the format?
It was a virtual training. And so it was a large group. So, you know, verbal participation was difficult, but we used like chats and stuff like that. And we would ask poll questions and then be able to create word clouds from what they said. And that was good to bring about the interaction, right? And one of the questions we asked at kind of the beginning of the session was, you know, well-being is an ocean, right? And it's a very broad topic and it means something different to everybody. So we started with, you know, what does well-being mean to you? And it was, you know, they would put in and we created a word cloud from it and we created one from each session and then kind of made an amalgam of it. And it was fascinating to see, right? Because you would see some of the things you would expect. And of course, there was a lot of overlap and but there was also some uniquenesses. And it really showed that, you know, it's a tall order, right? To have a well-being program and well-being strategy and an organization this broad that's really going to meet what everybody defines it as, right? So for one person, it might be happiness. For another person, some of the frequent ones that came up were happiness and balance, right? And I think that does kind of capture probably it very well. If you can have balance and happiness, that probably is like an ultimate feeling of well-being. So what can you do to curate that?
Mm-hmm. And it's also good to like see other people's perception, right? Like, I put forward what it means to me, but seeing everyone else's is so great, right? The context of it. especially as managers and leaders, is those group, it's not just me that has this challenge, or it's not just me that thinks of it this way. Did you lead this, or did you bring someone in? I'm always interested to know, This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode. You lead this personally? Who led this?
We did it in-house. We facilitated it in-house. Nice. Yeah, because most of it was, you know, a lot of our material, and we wanted it to be specific to our Cognizant programs and offerings.
And you mentioned when we last spoke as well, you kind of built an online page, right, for the employees to kind of grab. Because sometimes, let's be honest, we offer some benefits and some of our employees don't even know about, despite all of our best efforts and communications as well. So you kind of built a portal, if I remember.
We did. And it's we're all drowning in emails, right? We're drowning in communication. So it is difficult. And so, you know, you promote and you communicate things as often as you can, but it's part of it too, is somebody is going to read it, but if they don't need it now, you know, they're going to put it aside. And then it's just that presence to always have it in front of them, so they're aware of it. So when it is something that would be useful to them, they're available to know where to find it. So we have an intranet page where we have different, information and things on there. So what we did is we did create like a global well-being landing page, which has, you know, our overview of our strategy, our resources. And it's also a place where we're able to keep an updated calendar of all the different events that are going on. And we have, you know, events that are available globally to everybody. And then we have events that might be specific to a region or a country, right? So from this one page, then you can see the overall global view, but then you can also dig in and maybe go to your country page as well and glean a little bit more specifics.
Yeah, I think that part's really important, right? Because a lot of times it's like, well, what's here for Chris? What is it? You're creating more of a personalized experience, then people are much more likely to visit if they know it's relevant to me, right? I think that's one thing that companies are still struggling with, is trying to create that customer. Same thing we do with our customers, right? Creating that very unique experience for them. How do we do that for each of our employees? Right.
Yeah. And it is difficult, right? Because you don't, it's almost like you'd have to have a crystal ball and predict exactly what somebody wants at any given time. Right. So I think we do offer a lot, and there's a lot there, and we don't expect people to attend everything or to use everything. Right. But it's more going back to that. What does well-being mean to you? You know, what's important for you and what you're going to want to use might be very different from what's important to me and what I want to use. So we need to kind of make sure that we're reaching as many people as we can, and, you know, allow them to pick what's meaningful to them.
Yeah. How do you you and the team decide what you're going to allocate resources, time, energy to? Because there's so many things you can be doing, especially if we talk about the well-being space. There's so much that you can do. How do you prioritize this is what's going to get move the needle, or this is what's, what's going to benefit our employees the most?
Yeah. So we do have like a thoughtful approach of looking at it, right? So last year we had identified what our objectives were for this year, right? And so for this year we knew, okay, we want to focus on, you know, launching and communicating and aligning to that global terminology, the global brand, et cetera. And the intention was to focus on, you know, alignment so that people are aware of what the strategy is, and then engagement and awareness, right? So having that page. So it was like foundational aspects of it. And I think then as we look into next year, our priorities are to build upon that, right? Well, how can we reach more people, leverage some of what we have? We can't do everything. Yeah. We have a long list of things that we could
sure.
do. And it's across, you know, the benefit space and the well-being space. So I think as with any company, we are just, you know, looking to see where can we make the greatest impact, you know, where, where, and part of that is based on, you know, where are we seeing that employees are accessing the most or use or attending the most types of events. So they kind of help to lead us too in terms of what they want.
Mm-hmm. Looking back when you build that foundation, which is obviously so important, right? If you don't get that right, nothing else matters because it's going to crumble, literally, in the analogy as well. What would you have done differently? Or is anything you would have done differently now looking back?
I think there's always things that you can do differently, right? And that you can do. I think what's good about this space is it's a journey, right? So you can always tweak and go back and readjust things. And I think with this space specifically too, it's not static, right? So I think it's something that you put something forward that works now, and then in 3 years you may need to tweak it anyway to keep pace and to keep current. So I think what I'm glad that we did is, you know, we were thoughtful and very particular in, you know, the words that we landed on and what we rolled out, so that they would have longevity and that they were meaningful and they weren't just like a copy paste, right? So we were very specific in that way. And I think just, you know, it's just with, you know, with time, you know, we can continue to evolve it, you know, as we get more resources and, you know, we have more time to do that. So.
Yeah. It's an important point. Like, it almost seems crazy now when you see companies saying, here's our 5-year plan or here's our 5-year strategy. It's going to change. It's going to evolve, right? No, you're not going to get it right perfectly. And you're going to have to constantly pivot. You're saying, along the way, given the last 2 years that we've had behind, or 3 years behind us now, I think the idea that we're going to be on this linear path is just not going to happen.
It's like the balance of that, right? Because you have to have a plan to know where you're going.
Yeah.
Have the roadmap to know where you're going. And even in our our benefits and well-being space, we did have that. We had a 3-year plan. We're going into our third year now. And you know, the level of specificity gets refined every year. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it's like if we look at what are our next year's objectives compared to this year's and that year's, at the high level category perspective, they're still constant, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, which is good because it means you have something that you're progressing towards. It's the specifics of how to get there that might evolve and change.
100%. I think that's one of the great things that come out of this, you know, leaders needing to be bold, try new things, fail forward. You're not going to get everything right. You're right. The overarching strategy, the vision, the purpose, how that's aligned, not going to change. But underneath that, how you get there, it's going to move its way around. And you've got to try. You may do something in, you know, 6 months from now, so actually we're going to try a different way of achieving that. In the past, we were so, as organizations, the leaders were so locked into, it has to be this way, the right way, perfect the first time. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, because it takes too long, right? And you have to move with some degree of speed. And I think if, you know, the pandemic has taught us anything, nobody would have expected that the world would have been working from their living room for a couple of years, you know? So being able to be agile and adapt to that degree of change for it, you know, and having enough fluidity in your plan to allow for that.
Mm-hmm. What does your team look like in terms of your makeup of the team? I'm just wondering underneath, because you obviously have a few different roles in your what does your team structure look like?
So I think we're set up, you know, not unsimilar from other organizations in that we're aligned both, you know, globally and regionally. So we have, and then with the benefits and well-being space, you know, there is a lot of overlap. So we do have people focused on regional benefits, and then we have, you know, people who might be more, you know, well-being focused. And then we have, you know, global resources as well. But it's not just this team. Like, we collaborate a lot, you know, with our HR partners, with our D&I partners, you know, with businesses, you know, and able to be successful together. Yeah.
Do they sit in different markets as well, or are they all based in the US?
No, I mean, we're a true global company. So we're, in all corners of the world, and the team is it kind of follows that, right?
But that's great, though, right? You have a pulse on the local community and cultures, etc. Like, global but local mindset, you know, in that sense.
I think, you know, we always say, like, global doesn't mean vanilla, and it doesn't mean one size fits all, right? Mm-hmm. It means that you have a consistent glue and a consistent operating model or processes or strategy But you need to have that local relevance, right? One, to, you know, adhere to what makes sense in that market and what expectations are in that market. Because otherwise, it just won't work if you try to force fit, you know, one cultural adaptation somewhere else.
Yeah. For those new that are going into the role, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first moved into this sort of the well-being side of the role?
I mean, I think it's an exciting time to be in well-being now. So I think for somebody that's new to this space, it's a great time to be in it. I think it's evolved so much and it's become more, I mean, I guess if I think about it, it's almost like analogous to the way HR has evolved, right?
100%.
If you think back to, you know, the 1970s, I think we were still called personnel, right?
Personnel relations.
Yeah. And it was more like administrative, and it's really evolved into being the strategic function it should be, right? Where it's aligned and it's a senior advisor and a, you know, a directive beacon for organizations. Similarly, I think, you know, if you go back enough years, wellness came out of health and it came out of just, you know, a very more siloed definition, whereas now it is more about the whole person. And for any organization, but some even more particular, that's your key resource in the company is the people. It's a people mm-hmm. business. And that's how you make sure that your clients and your customers are happy. So I think for anybody going into it now, it's the kind of the awareness of the responsibility that, you know, you do have direct impact on, you know, how the company can perform in focusing in the right ways on the topic.
They're not going to know how hard it was before, are they? Like, similar with some of the HR leaders coming in, like, you know, now back in the day, trying to get a decent sized budget for your well-being initiative mm-hmm. was tough from conversations I've had for many, many years. Yeah. Now's companies are throwing money at this space, really understanding it. Don't get me wrong, it took a global pandemic for a lot of companies to wake up. That shouldn't be the case, but obviously it's a silver lining that came out of it, right? But similar with HR back in the day, trying to get the resources, the budget behind it. Similar with wellbeing, it was quite, in many cases, it was like a nice to have in a lot of companies, right? Now it's a strategic imperative, like taking care of the mental health and wellbeing of your people. It seems obvious, but
and I think especially, like, you know, in, you know, as markets change from year to year, right, there's always going to be different, you know, financial pressures, and whether there's you know, budget more readily available some years than other years. I mean, I don't think it necessarily has to be, I mean, of course everything's easier if you have budget budget assigned to things, but it's one of those aspects where you just have to think creatively and think about, well, how can I still create this culture and still have this sense of belonging, with, you know, different budget.
Like
sizes.
What you did with the creating a common language, right? It doesn't cost. Like you creating that common language in the organization and that training with those leaders didn't cost a huge sum, but has a fundamental shift in the way that those conversations happen, right? And what it means to work at Cognizant.
There's a lot, if you think about it, the most powerful impacts of like a well-being culture probably have no dollar signs.
Yeah, you're right, 100%. It's a big misconception there. It's a very good point. What are you most excited about? You mentioned some of the things for next year. What are you most excited about moving forward?
You know, just continuing to see the impact that we can make on associates, continuing to see the journey. I think we still have, you know, a lot to do. Don't want to give away too many spoiler alerts, but I think we have a lot of plans and things that we can do to evolve this space in the organization. So really looking forward to just continuing to do that, especially, you know, as we continue to grow. So I think, mm-hmm. you know, the bigger we get, it's just more and more opportunity.
More and more important as well.
People.
And I'm sure this is now going to also become a really good from an employee brand perspective, a great, you know, people want to be proud and people to work in an organization also want to be part of, like, if I was ever going to go work for a company, one of the things I'll be looking at is what are their focus on well-being. Like, it's important to me, it's part of my why and my values as well, so that's also super important. To make
sure. It is very important, because that's like your day-to-day experience, right?
Yeah.
And that's and there's, it's so much of a part of our life, and it's something that you know, is potentially harder to replicate from one company versus another, right? It's very mm-hmm. kind of personal to that organization. So it is something that as people choose where to work or to choose if they're going to change companies, it's important that they really, you know, get a sense of, is it a fit?
Yeah. Listen, I want to turn up to a job every day where I understand that my leader and manager cares about my well-being.
Yeah.
And it's so sad that not everyone can say that. That should just be a given.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of it in the past was, you know, just traditional ways of working, and even, you know, what it meant to be a leader has massively changed. When I was told to be a, you know, when I was trained to be a manager for the first time, there wasn't even the word well-being wasn't even mentioned in that 2-week training back then. Yeah. You didn't share your feelings with your team. You didn't share how you, you know, if you had a bad day, you know, you're the manager, they're your team. That's it. Like, you know, it's just sort of very much that sort of command and control. Now moving toward more sort of leading with empathy and servant leadership, which is where we're moving to now, which is so refreshing for both the manager and the team. Like, energy is just like, oh, we can just be human at work. Yeah.
Agree. And I think it's important too, like as we're on that kind of that road, right, and evolving to that way, it's like, yes, that there's that manager's role to set the tone and make sure it's a safe place to talk about it. But there's a certain degree too, where it can't be completely like paternalistic, where it's not only the manager's job, right? It's like the associate also, and the employee also has a role in being responsible for their own well-being, because you know, the manager has to create an environment where, yes, take breaks, and yes, you're a person and do this, but they also, you know, it's, unless you're in an environment where it is more of a punch the clock or an assembly line type of situation, you know, the manager isn't, and they don't have the bandwidth, nor should they have to be saying, okay, it's time for your break, you've been on the computer too long, right? Like, the individual too needs to have accountability to know when they need the break and what's right for them.
And again, that's kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about having the education piece, having those resources, getting that into the hands of the employees so they understand that, the value of that, and they actually have some practical tools that they can use. You know, we to make it super simple, right? Sometimes we overcomplicate it. It could be something as simple as like a timeout or, you know, well-being days, you know, whatever it may be as well. But look, really excited for you and the team. I know you're just kind of on the journey like everyone. No one's, you know, this is a never-ending journey. This is not a, you know,
this is what makes it exciting, right? Like, because otherwise what happens when you get to the end, right? There is no end. It's because, you know, we're always going to be people. So our needs are going to continue to evolve. And as our environments change around us also, right, it poses new opportunities and challenges. So
yeah, I think that's one of the great things, though. Already I'm starting to see companies help move from being just reactive. Right. You know, let's just try and treat some of the symptoms. The problem itself, not just the symptoms of it, and providing those resources where people can actually self-serve and actually educate themselves. Because a lot of the times the well-being and the benefits come in when it's kind of already not too late, but, you know, we could have avoided getting here. There's a lot of things we could have done up front, if that makes sense, to avoid us getting to this stage as well. Last question, you know, for those new that are kind of coming into this role for the first time, what would be your sort of parting piece of advice for those that are just stepping into the role for the first time?
I think it would be a little bit like what we talked about previously, which is, you know, being flexible to evolve and, you know, look at that multi-year plan as a framework, because it is important to have it as like a guidepost, right? But being agile enough to adapt to it, as, you know, depending on what's unique to your culture or where your, you know, employee base demographics make sense and what that means.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'm glad you're well again as well. Have an amazing new year and happy Merry Christmas in advance. And I'll see you again soon. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris.